Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
Mike, did you have on your sheet the two matches that would get the most push and feel most significant and have the most revved up heat and energy on the eve of WrestleMania would be Pat McAfee against Austin Theory and Drew McIntyre against Happy Corbin?
I suppose not. but I'm kind of glad that they did that. If we're not getting any further Roman and Lesnar interaction tonight, why not put some more heat on the undercard? And boy, is that an undercard. I mean, it's hardly WrestleMania worthy, like the Corbin and Drew thing. And that's what they ended the show with. It's pretty interesting. I think the show felt a little more productive toward pumping a few things up for WrestleMania just a day away than I was anticipating, especially with the undercard. And they definitely addressed the major matches as well with videos, more or less, and Charlotte coming out. But yeah, they really turned it up at the end, and Corbin especially like turned up the heelness. Moss, I think, really knowing what to do with it. So I think that split might be inevitable. But yeah, I would not have predicted what they really pressed tonight for the big weekend.
I think they ended up – I think they did a remarkable job getting people worked up over seeing Pat McAfee kick that punk-ass bitch Austin Theory's ass.
Yep, yep.
That's the debut of my McAfee impersonation. and I thought they did a good job. I mean, I kind of am ready to see what McAfee has in store for Theory. I mean, you know, the fan at ringside, the quote fan who had his drink stolen before Theory – threw it into McAfee's lap, sort of stole the scene with his over-the-top acting. But Theory was like, you know, I mean, if you're just watching this to be, you know, entertained and engaged and, you know, and you're not, like, thinking about, you know, credentials or you know, four-star matches in Japan and who should be getting more TV time, you're just, like, letting yourself kind of get sucked in. I mean, I think people are ready to see McAfee kick Austin Theory's ass, and I think they did a nice job with that tonight. And I'm not saying that's like makes WrestleMania, you know, great, but I just think, you know, like you said, making the most out of the undercard that you have, that match got amplified tonight. And I think people who were skeptical of even imagining that they would care about this might be a guilty pleasure theirs to see McAfee get his hands on Theory.
I was more affected by the Theory McAfee part than I was McIntyre and Corbin.
I was too. Yep.
And we got that double dose of Theory as well. It, like the hit and run, basically, fleeing into the principal's office of all places.
Totally.
For protection. And then coming out again, stealing that genuine fan who paid for his front row seat and was standing in the corner with his soda full of ice. Came back out to taunt McAfee again. And I also am like, this has always been the case. Sometimes they do this where the commentators sort of stick together. And I really like Michael Cole's sort of soothing him and saying, like, you could tell Cole wasn't scolding him. You could tell Cole is also sick of Theory, but you've got to take the high road here. Let's stay at the table, do our job. And I really like Cole's performance in that as well.
You know, that was my next thing I was going to bring up, is I thought Cole has been good throughout. You know, the veteran, sage, you know, regular guy who's not on social media, just goes home to his family, shows up, does his job professionally. And then you got McAfee, the sports talk radio hothead, who's just going to get in there and just get all worked up. And, of course, you know, Theory is just poking and prodding him. And Cole's like, come on, you know, like, let's just be professionals, do our job here, you'll get your chance at WrestleMania. I thought Cole hit the right tone and has done a really good job. I think McAfee's acting has been spot on. You know, you could imagine him hamming it up. going over the top because, well, that's sort of his brand. And he hasn't. He actually, it's weird to say, but he actually kind of has dialed it down a little bit as this kind of feud has progressed. He's dialed it down to like 9 from being at like 13 at the beginning, and normally he just runs at 10. It's like you can tell there's a little cerebral reaction going on that's trying to override the emotions, thanks to Cole being sort of the in his ear on this. And it is just how that succeeds is you know there's more going on with McAfee than he can get out of his system right now. And that's gonna come out at WrestleMania.
If you said, a month and a half ago they're gonna have this match, this is pretty ideal, I think, in terms of getting people amped up about it. And the Drew thing, for people who didn't watch the show, Madcap said, what does Drew's sword and his mom have in common? Drew McIntyre lost them both because Drew's mom died. Was it breast cancer, Mike? It was cancer, I think. I can't remember. But she died, and then that's who the sword is named after. And McAfee goes, that's crossing a line. And I just groaned, like, it crossed a line into making me not enjoy the storyline because the tone of it is Corbin and Madcap are obnoxious, and you want to see Drew beat him up. But, like, I don't buy that Corbin would go there. Not in this current character, or think he has to, or what his motivation would be to do that. And so, to me, it just kind of came across as going so far that it seemed like kind of cheap heat to elevate a match that didn't really have a high enough ceiling to be worth that line. That was my take. How about you?
Yeah, I found it jarring for sure and out of character. And just to clarify, because I think you just said Moss made the joke because Moss.
No, I thought I said Corbin, and then I was questioning whether I meant. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
But it was Corbin that made the joke, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm just
defending myself because I think I said Corbin, but if I said Moss, I'll look pretty foolish right now. It's on tape.
Well, we'll find out.
Yes.
Or maybe not. Maybe it'll.
Well, Javier will let us know.
Right. There we go. I thought it was jarring, and yeah, like you said, out of character, and the only bit that made sense is that it was Corbin trying to do the joke and not Moss, where Moss's jokes have been mostly harmless, which is a Douglas Adams book, but also just corny and annoying. Like, that was the point. And then it was right. Corbin is the one who's taken it too far. So I think the heat is to be on Corbin more than Moss. And I think even Moss was showing, like I mentioned, some signs of almost regret, like,
yeah.
Are we taking this too far now? So, yeah, I think that was the idea, but I did find it jarring.
I think you're right. That would be the defense or the explanation for doing what they did. My argument is you can explain it. You can make sense booking-wise of it. It might fit into the Corbin-Moss dynamic and kind of where they're heading with it. I still don't do it. I don't need that level of real life being brought into this type of feud. It's kind of already a little eye-rolling about I could behead you, I could chop you in half. The sword thing already is kind of pushing the limits when they're, swinging at a sword. And if Corbin doesn't duck, Drew is literally chopping his head off in mid-ring. Just don't do moves where if the person doesn't duck, it's death. The sledgehammer with Triple H. Like, I never liked that because, of course, he's not going to smash someone's skull like a watermelon. He's never going to use it the way you would use it if you're defending your family. And yet he would wind up to swing that way, and you know it won't work. But if he put his fist over it and he jabs towards you, then that was going to work. And that, so don't do something where the payoff isn't going to come. Anyway.
I've always sounded off against the Drew sword since he started carrying that around. And I actually rewound that swing tonight to see, because he swung it right-handed like a baseball swing, like a baseball bat swing. And I rewound it to see if it would have landed like the broadside against Corbin or the edge. And I think it's probably pretty tricky to swing a broadsword, a two-handed weapon like that. But like you said, it looked like a murder attempt but Corbin just happened to duck. So we still get the match tomorrow.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's pause, introduce the show, and then we'll get to our calls and more conversation about this show
and our final post-show before WrestleMania weekend. Just a reminder that we'll have a bunch of WrestleMania coverage at pwtorch.com all weekend. So be sure you're checking that out, including Brandon LeClaire, who's covering the Hall of Fame ceremony that's on Peacock right now. I know many of you listening are probably watching that in the background, and we appreciate you choosing to listen to our live stream at the same time. And if you've downloaded our show, then thank you for doing that also. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, April 1st, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of the aptly named Wade Keller podcast and post shows, including a special Friday flagship edition of our Blue Logo show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, with longtime Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Sean Radican. We previewed the ROH pay-per-view and also went in-depth just on where ROH can go under Tony Khan's ownership. And is it good for Tony Khan, for AEW, for wrestling fans to have him producing and promoting ROH at the same time as AEW? We got into some of the best case and worst case scenarios as far as that goes. We also just talked about WrestleMania weekend so far. Sean watched a bunch of wrestling yesterday and earlier today, and we'll be watching, and there's a lot more this weekend besides WrestleMania and NXT, and we've got you covered on that. Sean basically lets you know what to look out for, what to look for, what might appeal to you, and what to watch on replay that's occurred so far. We had an eventful ROH pay-per-view that was taking place as SmackDown took place, and we've got our full coverage of that at pwtorch.com. Also, Super Card of Honor, a lot going on that show also, and we'll have audio analysis of everything going on throughout the weekend. But first things first, I am Wade Keller, and the other voice you hear is Mike Myers. He is of pwtorch.com, a contributor covering WWE Main Event and WWE Kickoff shows. Mike, welcome back to the Co-host Chair.
Thanks, Wade. At the Mike Show 42 on Twitter. Good to be back with you.
Good to have you here. It's a big episode of SmackDown, the last chance for WWE to really sell us all on this event. And overall, I mean, I think the two major things they featured that were fresh material that stood out as new emotions rising were those two matches. But there were some good video packages throughout the show and some matches that had some level of stakes, the NXT title match and the Under the Giant Battle Royal. We'll talk more about that as the show progresses. If you are live streaming our show, you are invited to call us and participate in our conversation. The phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That will flag you on the switchboard and let us know that you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. One other programming note before we get to our calls. We have revamped, reinvigorated our YouTube channel. It's been dormant for years, and we have been talking about and planning for a relaunch behind the scenes for a while. And this weekend, it is up and running. A new one-hour fireside chat, PW Torch fireside chat, is up and running with Tyler Sage and Zach Haydorn talking about WrestleMania 38 and other news. So check that out. More to come this weekend and beyond. So as they say, hit that subscribe button and like that first video and help us in that YouTube algorithm get more love in terms of recommendations to other YouTube users who might not be hearing this plug or know that we're out there. All right, Mike, you ready for some calls?
Let's do it.
All right, cool. We're going to begin with Sean in Murfreesboro. Sean, good to hear from you. Welcome.
Wade, it's always good to talk to you. Mike, I'm still super jealous that you gave Javier the theme song and you made it for him, but again, I can take it. I can take it. Mike, always good to talk to you, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Sean.
Yeah, no problem. Wade, I wanted to say I'm glad you guys got the YouTube channel back. I got to listen to Zach and Tyler talk to stuff going on with WrestleMania weekend and all the stuff. It was a really good show, and I'm glad you guys got that going again. I'm looking forward to listening to some more of that. So, but the show... like you said, was, you know, for what it was good. I mean, I wanted to talk about the Charlotte Ronda video package. I thought it was really, really well done. I really liked it. I wish they would have done more of that other than – because with the build itself, I mean, the build has been good, and the problem has been, you know, building that sympathy for Ronda and then Ronda not really helping her cause by just saying, I'm a badass and I'm going to beat you and I'm going to break your arm and all this kind of stuff, and it doesn't really help you want to root for her. But I wanted you guys to talk about that video package, kind of the build, and then as far as I still think it needs to end the show tomorrow night. I think it needs to main event if Becky and Bianca does not, because I just don't want, as much as I love Stone Cold from the past, and I'm glad he's going to be on the show, and I think that stuff with him and KO is going to be really, really good for what it is, which I don't know what it's going to be. But I don't want that main eventing the show. I want a match main eventing, and I think Charlotte and Ronda have done well enough, even though the build hasn't been 100%. It's been good enough where I think they can main event and tell a great story and have a great match. So what do you guys think about all that?
Mike, take that first.
Well, I agree with the sentiment of having a match with your current stars, a real match with your current stars, main eventing whatever you're going to call WrestleMania, no matter how many nights it happens to be at that point in time, as compared to, you know, a senior citizen and one of your current stars having a non-match. I'm pretty sure the show, they came out outright tonight and said that that is the main event, though, the KO show with Steve Austin. So I think that's what we're going to get. It's kind of a dilemma. I think it would be tough for either of those two matches, the women's matches, to come after the KO show. And I think that's how the company would justify it. If they do the KO show last, and that's just how it is, it's going to get a huge pop. The crowd is going to know the whole night that they have that to look forward to, so they might sort of have a like an energy savings for that. And I think the show and the company is going to get the reaction, the pop they want to end the show, even though it's not a match and it's not really the best thing for your current stars. You're pulling a guy from years ago to make that happen, and it says a lot about the state of the company, but they would just defend themselves and say, but listen to them. Listen to the crowd. What have we done wrong? So I get the dilemma. I'd like a match, but I think they're just going to go for that nostalgia pop.
You know, Becky Lynch told Ariel Helwani that she'd want to go on match. She said, my match is going to steal the show. My match is going to be better. My story's been better. Everything I've done has been better. Nobody, not one single person, unless you're an idiot, can say their stuff has been better than mine. But wherever they go, even if they do go last, I don't care. My stuff is better. My stuff is the real main event. And that was mostly in response to whether her match should come before or after the Charlotte Ronda Rousey match. They could do the match order where you close with Charlotte and Ronda or Becky and Bianca, and you just have New Day against Sheamus and Ridge Holland in between to bring the crowd down, or the Usos against Shinsuke and Books as sort of a, you know, sorry, we're putting you here, but that's the semifinal, and in the Austin Chaos segment is right before that. I think there's a way to arrange it where you don't put the main event in a tough spot of having to follow the Stone Cold Steve Austin pop and everything that segment accomplishes. And I do think, and Todd Martin expressed this real strong on the Fixed VIP podcast yesterday, that a wrestling match should go on last. And I think for a lot of reasons it should, including it just sends the wrong message about who the biggest stars in WWE are today, because WWE has to draw ratings and sell tickets with Ronda and Charlotte and Bianca. And to a degree, Becky, Charlotte, Belair, and to a lesser extent, Ronda on a weekly basis going forward for years to come. And having a talk show with Austin and KO, as special as it is to have Austin, arguably the biggest star ever, or at least of his generation, it's a big deal. But it's not a wrestling match. Sean, back to you.
Yeah, I agree with everything you guys said. And I was with Todd wholeheartedly when he had brought that up because, you know, again, it always diminishes, you know, the stars you have right now. You know, you're trying to build them supposedly up But then if you're going to say, well, I'm going to have Stone Cold last, and they'll say, well, KO was in it. But, yeah, you've hurt KO in so many ways up until this, and you've done a good job building him back up a decent amount. Because I thought when he was with Shane and the whole stuff with Shane back a couple years ago, I thought he couldn't ever build himself back up. And amazingly, because he's such a good talker, he has, and that's what I'm glad for that. But, yeah, I don't want the Stone Cold ending the show. I think you have to have a match in that. So I'm curious to see what they do. But what did you think of the video package? Did it help build, you know, Ronda in that sympathetic, like, kind of overcome any odds type thing? Like, what did you think about the video package kind of building Ronda up?
It felt like, too, the backstage interview with Caleb Braxton was meant to give a softer touch, or not a softer touch, but frame Ronda as keeping her cool on purpose, deliberately, despite what Charlotte did to her. Because I thought her prior promo last week came across like Charlotte had not gotten the better of her 2 weeks in a row, and it was just a promo she would have given had those previous angles not happened. And now you have that being addressed, and Ronda's just like, I'm keeping my cool until I unleash, you know, holy hell on Charlotte at WrestleMania. And I'm glad they addressed that, because Ronda's so even-toned and Charlotte's so even-toned, it's hurt the storyline. Charlotte's got her same arrogant cadence. I am not shaken. No one's going to shake me. I am going to beat you. You will not snap my arm off. I am the queen. I am the cool one. So she's got that tone. And you got Ronda being just sort of soft talking to the microphone on every promo. You can't hear the first four words out of her mouth because she fades in to a higher volume. And then she just has that kind of weird and look in her eyes, and she just does her thing, but it's not like emotionally charged. It's just sort of pent up. And I just don't think there was a real ebb and flow, but at least they addressed it. Mike, did the video package help take what I think has been mediocre build and turn it into like, make the best they could out of it, make the most they could out of it?
Well, the actual video package, which is like the, you know, the montage of their exchanges,
yeah,
I thought it's expertly crafted. WWE is second to nobody when they put those things together. They're awesome at it. And I believe that it gave the match a big fight feel and a strong buildup, but only in the sense of wanting to see two people fight who claim that they're going to, you know, tear each other apart, or Ronda is literally going to remove at least one of Charlotte's arms and deliver it to her family at ringside as a souvenir.
which she says her family will love. And I'm like, that's a weird family.
It is weird. Like, she's not going to have it taxidermied or anything first.
Even if. Does that make it better?
Yeah, marginally, I think.
Oh, it's still in the weird family category. But, yeah, you're right. It is marginally more better.
Right. As for the pre-recorded segment, the earlier today segment when she was sparring, I thought it was probably better that it was pre-recorded and not done in front of the crowd.
Yeah.
And I noticed, well, I just gave it away, but yeah, she was sure to mention that she's going to chill out and hang out with her family, feed her baby, which are, you know, relatable things for normal people. So therefore we side with her, and I'm not feeling it. So I don't have an interest in it, in rooting for one over the other, really. Like, I don't find either one of them very likable. So that there's that, but the video package is what WWE always does, and looked really good.
And by the way, did you know that Ronda has a baby that she takes care of when she's not wrestling and training?
I have heard of that, actually.
Yeah,
now that you mention. Yeah.
She ought to mention that sometime. Sean, anything else for us?
Yeah, I wanted to echo your sentiments as far as I thought Cole was really good, you know, tonight. And he's been good, you know, per usual overall. I think he does a really good job. He's gotten, you know, a lot more, you know, over the last few years, he's gotten a lot better just kind of staying in his role. And I wanted to say, Wade, again, VIP members, if you're not a VIP member, you have to because of the fix, you know, and all the shows that go along with that. But, Wade, it was amazing how you weren't playing heel Wade, but Todd thought you were playing heel Wade, and he was getting all mad. And I'm like, Wade's just asking a question, Todd. He just was curious. Like, you don't have to get that mad at him. Like, come on now. Like, that's heel Todd. I'm sorry. That's heel Todd right there. I'm sorry. I'm calling it right now. But
you just laid down some epoxy on Todd Martin, Sean.
Yeah. How does he not know what epoxy is? Like, I didn't even know what epoxy is, and I don't know a lot about that kind of stuff. But
We all have our knowledge voids, and we found that, you know, I don't know, that's cause.
Yeah, but going back to the show, I thought it's really sad what they've done. I mean, Finn Balor has the U.S. title, but they've diminished him a lot, and it's really just kind of, I don't know. I don't know what you guys maybe might think about it, but I just think it's kind of sad. He shouldn't, especially in a random tag team match. Yeah, I mean, it's just a tag team six man, but he still shouldn't be taking a pin, even though you're trying to get Theory, you know, built up, which I get that side of it, but then you're hurting Balor on the other side. But I wanted to talk about real quick the Ricochet. They just don't, again, we know they don't care about the Intercontinental and U.S. titles. We kind of get that, you know, but they have Ricochet look dumb against Angel and Umberto last week, and then, you know, they get him in a triple threat just because of that, and then he beats them. But it's because Angel and Humberto are dumb and they want to argue with each other over who gets the win, and then he gets back up and beats them. Was that segment as bad as I thought? Even though Ricochet is doing, they're trying to quote unquote build him up, and he's great in the ring, but I didn't like that segment at all. What did you guys think about that match in general?
Yeah, Mike, go ahead, take that first.
I'm right there with you, Sean. It was. I found the premise of the match preposterous. It's good that they got them in the ring to give the audience some in-ring action. Ricochet maintains the title in spite of the odds. I guess that's good for the good guy, the underdog. But you have to think, Los Lotharios, what is their mindset coming into this match? What in the hell do they think is going to happen once they get the two-on-one upper hand over Ricochet? It's like they got in there and then it suddenly struck them that, oh, one of us might win this singles championship. And then they start sort of getting annoyed and irritated with one another for trying to win a singles championship. It's like it never occurred to either of them or anybody.
I find that way more believable than you. I think Roberto and Angel are just obsessed with finding beautiful women. And they thought, this is great. We get to beat up Ricochet. And I don't think it crossed their minds until the moment that Umberto tried to, you know, get a pin, steal a pin, that it occurred to Angel Garza that maybe this could be trouble. You think more highly of their match planning than I do.
I mean, the best I can do is call that a devil's advocate argument. And because my mind was boggled when I was watching that because I don't know what they were thinking. Like, are they even wrestlers? What are they? Are they competing? What are they doing?
They're womanizers. They're handsome. They're handsome men who like women, and they just happen to be in a match where they didn't think ahead of time about the rules, Mike.
Well, they could be getting even more women if they didn't bother with the match that they don't care about its outcome.
there is that.
Shift the time spent.
Now we have moved into the realm of WWE's whole House of Cards falls apart if we go that far. I mean, it was some good action. Ricochet celebrating a win after what happened on Raw on Monday. It's like, I'm sorry, I don't take you seriously anymore. I don't care if you just beat two people. Like, people can win and lose, but if you're trying to give somebody a push as a champion, it's just having him lose like he did on Monday was so, it just undercut it so much. I love people who have their phones up, by the way, as the Steiners are talking, including their kids. And they're like, you know, filming this on their phone. And like, you're never going to watch that back. It's on Peacock in high def. It's forever going to be on the internet, on YouTube in high def. You don't need to film this from your front row seat. But anyway, that's my side rant. I film stuff too, you know, concerts. I might never go back and watch it. Anyway, go ahead. Go ahead, Sean.
No, I just thought that segment in general was bad. And then with the tag team match with, you know, Naomi and Sasha, you know, it was fine for what it was. Again, they wanted to get wrestling on there, and they got some. I thought it was clunky, but it was fine. And then I was kind of thinking they're going to have now, I mean, I guess you could have the booking of, well, Naomi and Sasha won again tonight, so they're going to have Rhea and Liv win the tag team titles. I don't want anybody to win the tag team titles just because they don't mean anything, and I'm really just kind of like, I'm not looking forward. I mean, the match will be okay, but whoever wins, you know, Naomi, Sasha, Rhea, Liv, no matter what it is, they're not going to mean anything. And I'm curious to see where they go. So what do you guys think about that? And then I'll say really quick, Wade, I appreciate you and Mike and everybody, what they do. I'm excited about this weekend, getting to hear your guys' coverage on it, getting to watch the show. I mean, they've done a decent job building it up, and I'm curious to see how good it is this weekend. Javier, I'm excited to hear your primer, man. I'm curious to hear what you thought about, what you think about WrestleMania. And I appreciate you guys always taking my call. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. By the way, I want to let all the callers know, Mike, I'll throw to you in a second here. We got a decent number of people on hold, so we might run more swiftly through it. I was thinking we'd have, like, no callers. Everyone would be watching. I shouldn't be advertised. Everyone would be watching, like, ROH and Rampage and Hall of Fame, and instead everyone's just, you know, hanging out with us in the background. So we might be a little trying to get through our calls a little quicker than maybe on a normal Friday night, especially the big weekend ahead. So anyway, I want to throw that in while thinking of it. Mike, your thoughts on the women's situation.
Not very interested in the women's tag division.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't even paint by numbers. It was just, let's get them on TV and do something. And it didn't really, you know, major momentum achieved, you know, it was just that, but nothing really achieved. All right, cool. Despite all our callers on hold, you can still call us 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad to indicate that you want to be on the show. The more, the merrier. All right, we will go next to actually, I don't recognize who this is, so we'll go to Eric Code 347. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from. Go ahead, 347. All right, they might have pushed 1 by mistake. All right, we'll go to Scott in Tampa next. Go ahead, Scott. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I thought tonight's show was okay. I mean, it was a go-home WrestleMania show. I didn't expect much. But, I have a couple of strong points that some folks may disagree with. But, I'm really excited about this weekend, but I'm mainly excited for the main event on Sunday, Roman and Brock. I think they've done a fantastic job with building it. And to me, this is my controversial statement here. This is, for me, the biggest main event WrestleMania match probably since WrestleMania 17. And for me, it's a couple of reasons. Like, I think since WrestleMania 17, in my opinion, the championship hasn't felt, like, important to the folks who are fighting for it in the main event. And, you know, with the build, with the way that the characters of Brock and Roman have been built, and especially Roman this past 18 months, like, nothing else matters besides being the top guy. Like, for me, the whole point of me, you know, loving wrestling as I do is that you should want to be the champion, the top champion, not champion on this brand, but the champion. And the fact that they're unifying the titles, even though it won't be, you know, forever, it'll be for a short time. For me, I really like it. And the promo on Monday by Roman was fantastic, and that video package was just A1. And, I'm excited for the match, but I'm also looking forward to what happens after, because come this time next year, guys, I think this roster on both shows is going to look vastly different. Just with, you know, the talent that they have in NXT, the way they're pushing them down there, despite talent not being that great. I just, for what I see, and based on Vince's booking over the years, like, those guys are coming up very soon, very quickly, and I think you're going to see a vastly different rosters come this time next year at WrestleMania. And you know, if they can't get The Rock against Roman, I don't know. Maybe we have a Braun Breaker, or we have a Gable Stevenson against Roman next year at WrestleMania. But, like, I'm excited for this match Sunday and then what goes on after. So, your thoughts on that?
Mike, yeah. I mean, I don't think it's obvious what WrestleMania next year will be. I'm not sure how vastly different the roster can be with the options that they have. But I think I hope that there's – I mean, as much as – everybody who's in the two women's title matches deserves to be in the spot that they're in. I hope that there are two or three different women in the main events next year. I'm not rooting for any of the women in the main events to be moved down the card. I just think I want fresh matchups, you know, at least fresh opponents for them, for all of them. But I could imagine, you know, Braun Breaker and Drew McIntyre challenging for the world titles. I could imagine Bobby Lashley, and God, it'd be nice if Big E got a push, and I think they could be a pair of main eventers.
Yeah.
Obviously, The Rock is an option. And, Scott, you mentioned somebody else. I just blanked out on
someone else you said. Just because, you know, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Gable,
and
of course.
I've heard very reports. Yeah. They want to push him. Yeah, they want to push him like Brock or something like that. That's what I've read, yeah.
Yeah, totally. So, Gable, so I think there are a number of options where you could imagine, even if, like, two or three of the people are injured or, you know, what, you know, if Roman and Brock aren't available, and two or three of the names I mentioned aren't available, I think you could still, with some time, knowing you've got to do it, build up to some WrestleMania-worthy, not blockbuster, but WrestleMania-worthy men's main events, too. And, you know, with Bayley and Sasha, not in top matches this year. Those are, you know, two strong candidates to be put in the top matches. So anyway, Mike, your thoughts on all that.
I mean, I'm all for the roster looking differently a year from now. If the purpose behind the changes are elevating those stars or making stars out of the people, if they're not elevated yet. Like, I'm not intimately familiar with the workings of NXT recently, but I do know that Bron Breakker seems to have that upward trajectory, and I'm curious to see if he's already appearing on Monday, you know, after this weekend, and where they go from there. But I always just worry that you see promising talent brought up, and then the efforts they put into them are either super fleeting or super secondary, you know, or tertiary.
Yeah.
And it's just lost in the mix, you know, blending in with traffic. And they seem to like to stick with things that they have going right now, or even worse, like dipping back into the old bag of tricks and like, well, we can get Brock back again. We can get The Rock back. He's a year older every year we go through this. And, well, let's get Steve Austin to main event a night of WrestleMania.
Ooh, yeah.
You know? So it's – I'm not confident of – like, Scott, I want them to do that, but I just worry about what their long-term intentions are with anybody they – bring up immediately.
I know I see your point, and I'm not saying that, you know, I've started watching NXT a little bit of, you know, the just new NXT a few weeks ago just to see, you know, who's out there, and it's not a great show. I don't think it's like there's a lot of promising talent. I'm just saying based on like the way Vince looks, it's like, oh yeah, well, this is a mini Raw and SmackDown, so like these are the people who are going to be there. So I don't have that much faith, but at the same time, like, they can't, can they continue doing what they've been doing the last few years? I mean, the business is different than it was, you know, 4 years ago, you know, with AEW and the way they're progressing, the talent that they've amassed, you know, I mean, they have their flaws too, but like, I don't know, like, I was watching the WWE Evil on Peacock earlier this week with Roman, and I was like, well, he's been in 10 years, and I remember the 10-year as after John Cena was in WWE, everyone was clamoring for who's the next guy, and here came Roman, and you know, and it kind of changed a little bit. So I'm just sort of thinking that that's the next plan here, and you know, kind of the same thing back in 2001. I mean, it was kind of like in the mix where they had a mix of older guys, and the attitude era was fading away, but you know, they had some middle-of-the-road guys, didn't know exactly what direction they were going to take. WCW was out of business and amassed a whole group of new talent. But it really was the younger guys who were in developmental who ended up being the top, you know, mainstay of WWE, you know, Randy Orton, Brock, and Cena and those guys. So, I don't know. That's just my opinion. I think I hope for something better. Like you, Mike, I don't really have that great faith, but you know, I'm trying to be somewhat optimistic, so let's hope that it is something better. The second point I'll bring up, I know you have a lot of callers away, but the women's tag team match, yeah, you know, it is what it is. But I will say this, I think the ladies have done a good job of what they've been presenting, mainly in the matches, because I wasn't interested in this at all. Like, I was thinking as soon as the match comes on, I'm going to run to the bathroom or run to the store or something. But like, at least they have me somewhat interested to just sit down and see it. So I will give them credit. You know, it's, you know, I wish Sasha and Rhea, you know, had a bigger spot on the card. They're the two best women in that match. But, you know, it is what it is. So I think they'll be – I think they'll do okay. And I don't know what we go with Sasha and Rhea, but I do hope that after this – I hope Sasha and Naomi don't win, or neither does Rhea and Liv, so that they can, you know, have a great singles run on their respective brands going forward. So, yeah, that's all I have for tonight. I guess I'm really excited for this weekend. And surprising, though, they didn't have anything with Sami Zayn and Johnny Knoxville. That's been a cool story for me that I've liked. It's a guilty pleasure of mine. But anyways, guys, thanks for taking my call. You guys have a great night and a great weekend, and enjoy this weekend.
Thanks, Scott. Yeah, no Sami, no Johnny. I mean, I think they did sufficient hype for that match until this week. But, you know, so much hype went on Theory, Austin Theory and Pat McAfee, but a little more love for the hype Sami has done building this up would have been fun. I think it is a selling point for the show to see what kind of convoluted contraption Sami builds to try to take Johnny Knoxville to places WWE's never gone before. That backfired terribly on Sami Zayn.
Yeah, that's going to be one not to miss because it's going to be a spectacle. And because it's on WrestleMania, I feel that they will spare no expense. And I do think that Zayn and Knoxville have gotten their fair share of TV time to build this up already, even if they didn't get any on the last, you know, the go-home show tonight. I don't think that's the end of the world. They've also been kind of busy on social media, I think, continuing to plug along with how tortured Sami has been during this ordeal since the match has been made official.
Yeah. I've got the Hall of Fame on in the background. And that video package on what Charmelle went through in her career, I was skeptical of whether she had Hall of Fame credentials. But, my God, after the Boogeyman and the Worms, I mean, it was just like one thing after another of her just making a horrified face at what WWE situations they put her in. That was a heck of a video package. If anyone ever wants to know why you're a wrestling fan, show them that video, and then they may never talk to you again. But anyway, let's try 347 again here. 347, you ready for us now? 347. All right. I'm hanging up on you. Push one again. All right. We'll go next to William in San Diego. William, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about tonight's SmackDown?
Hey, Wade. I think you probably – I may have missed this email, but emailed you earlier that I was going to be here in Dallas for the whole WrestleMania thing. So I'm actually here at the arena.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have any questions or if you need an outside correspondent or anything.
Yeah, you can be our on-site correspondent. Tell us what it's like. Relay what highlights to you, that highlights that you've experienced so far. What feels different than a normal WWE event?
You know, I did the last, like, big, hardcore WWE, like, WrestleMania show that I went to. Obviously, well, there was the one in Florida. I was actually there, but that didn't feel like full, like, it didn't feel really like WrestleMania because it was like they only sold like a third or however many tickets they sold.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was the year of like the pandemic looming over everything. And obviously we're still not out of the woods on that front. But I am like walking around with less weight on my shoulders about that. So the one that I was before was the Raw after Mania for when they were in New York. I'm 35, and that was like a different crowd. That felt like a much different crowd than it felt tonight. It just felt like more hardcore. Like they still had a lot of crossover between like those kind of hardcore AEW fans and the people who were there for Mania. Tonight it just feels like, you know, maybe there's like a few AEW fans, but it feels more like, you know, people are here for WWE, and it's not as passionate or energetic. Not to say that people are disinterested, but they just don't have that like same energy, like that like they can that super loud, you know, overpowering energy that you like, it, that almost like infects you. You know, that's kind of like contagious is the word that I was looking for.
How was the live show experience for SmackDown tonight with so many video packages? I know you got the bonus of the Hall of Fame ceremony, but did it feel like you were at something other than a live pro wrestling show tonight in a way?
Yeah, and that's probably another thing that influenced that reaction from the live crowd is just that, yeah, there were a lot more video packages than usual, and it is kind of like a different... You know, you're asking a different thing from people when you ask them to watch the screen versus when they have wrestlers there in front of them. It's less interactive and it's more passive. You know, it's like, you know, it's not that different from sitting at home and watching like a TV show or a movie. Like that's a passive experience. You just sit there and consume, and you don't really. No one goes like, no one cheers when they watch Breaking Bad or whatever, or when they watch a documentary. Or commercials, and that's kind of what it feels like when they pump so many packages. Although there were some exceptions, like when they did the Austin one for the Kevin Owens show, like people went crazy for Steve Austin, and they also did something like a package to promote the Undertaker Hall of Fame induction, and people went crazy for that. So, you know. So some packages people really like, but overall, yeah, it was just kind of passive watching.
Mike, jump in with a question.
So is the Hall of Fame, that's in the same venue that SmackDown took place in tonight and is happening live right now, is that correct?
Yeah, I think they're doing Sherman right now, so call me crazy, but I didn't really feel like enthused about watching that, but I just decided to sneak out and call here.
That's what I was clarifying, that you had the audacity to step away from that portion of the Hall of Fame ceremony.
I know. I think there's security people walking all over looking for me. I'm supposed to be feeling my seat right now.
Well, I hope you're hunkered down. So I'm curious about what was the ticket situation for a show like this? Like from when they went on sale, was it established this is SmackDown Live plus the Hall of Fame ceremony live on Peacock? And is it you don't have to get into specifics, but does that like command a premium ticket price compared to just a regular SmackDown show, you know?
Yeah, I do think it was a little, it was a little pricier than a regular SmackDown show. I want to know by how much. I think it was roughly the same as the Raw. And I guess if you, say that Raw is, 3 hours and SmackDown is 2 hours plus however long the Hall of Fame is going to run, I guess, the running times are roughly the same, so the ticket prices are roughly the same. It was a little pricier, I think.
And one other thing I was wondering, when SmackDown went on air live at 8 o'clock Eastern time, almost everybody was in the ring already for the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. And I was curious if before we went live on air, did everybody in that match get a proper entrance for the live audience? Was that a part of the pre-show? Or did they just sort of file out unceremoniously? I hope.
No. They filed in at their honestly with the AC/DC SmackDown theme song playing, and they were just kind of walking almost like kindergartners, in a group, all going to the ring.
Oh god!
And and yeah, they kind of killed the vibe going back to the video packages and everything, because we had a dark match before the show, Aliyah and Xylee, and. You know, it wasn't a killer match or anything, but people were cheering respectfully, and people were still kind of excited about being here. And then Michael Cole came out, and he got a mixed reaction, but a lot more positive than I remember it usually being. So I'm happy for him. And then Pat McAfee came out, and he got a pretty good reaction. And then, yeah, we had that entrance of everyone coming out for the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, and it was again, it was like a polite, you know, kind of cheerful reaction. Like, people just were excited for the show to start. And I think they went to a video package about the Battle Royal after that, and that kind of brought the crowd down a little before Finn Balor ultimately came out.
Were there any crowd responses tonight that surprised you, either more or less than you anticipated?
Yeah, I think you guys were talking about it at the beginning of the show, how they just done such a good job with, they did a, such a good job with the Austin Theory and Ted McAfee stuff tonight. The last time I saw McAfee, I think it was actually the first time I called to the show, was when I happened to be in New York, and I called in for the MSG thing. McAfee had, you know, come out to the ring before the show, and he got like a, you know, a nice reaction, but it wasn't like overwhelmingly positive. So I was kind of looking out for that, keeping an ear out. And he came out at the beginning of the show, and he got, like I mentioned, he got a nice reaction. But once it's the whole angle, like, people started going crazy. And I think this happened during, you guys probably didn't see it because they were probably commercials by that time. But when they did the angle that set up the 3-on-3 tag match, people just were going crazy chanting for McAfee. And afterwards, you know, they were chanting McAfee, McAfee super loud. And then they started chanting Theory sucks. And that also was a pretty loud reaction. And then once the match started, I don't think it started as we went. Came back from commercials. I think we were still in commercials at that point, but people were doing the Nakamura thing, like singing it, serenading him, and that was pretty loud too. And then I think by the time we actually came back from commercial, like, the crowd had calmed down a little. So that's kind of one of those things where, you know, the way they format the show and they place everything and the way they place the commercials, it kind of ended up biting them a little, because I think that's one of the reactions, that's the kind of reaction that you would hope and want to have appear on TV. It was like probably one of the loudest reactions from the crowd tonight.
Actually, cool.
Go ahead, Mike.
That the Theory sucks, I think, was on TV, and Pat McAfee even addressed it, that the crowd was saying that. So that part at least was caught on video, which is good, but it's interesting to hear that it was super effective in the arena as much as watching it on TV, the McAfee Theory parts.
Yeah. I mean, you guys mentioned how, like, or wait, you mentioned how, like, that angle worked and getting you more excited about it. This wasn't really like a match that I was like, oh man, I can't wait to watch it. At AT&T Stadium or whatever. But after being here tonight, it's like, it's almost like a prologue, you know, like, yeah, now you want to get to like the main story. And I'm more excited about watching it live now than I was before. So I think they did a pretty good job with that.
Mike, is there anything else you want to ask?
I think that's all I was thinking about regarding the live show.
Yeah. Do you want to share anything else with us, William? Just any other observations or anything from being at the show?
Yeah, I don't know if you guys heard this or not. That they probably muted it, but when they threw to that Ronda segment, when she first appeared on the Tron, there were some pretty loud boos from the people here in attendance. And then the segment went on, and she said her line about, you know, making Charlotte tap or taking her arm and giving it to her family as a trophy or whatever. And that got kind of a positive reaction, but it was still mixed. There were still some people booing in addition to some people who were cheering the line. So it's going to be really interesting what kind of reaction they get tomorrow. Sometimes things like that happen with Charlotte matches specifically. Like, I remember at SummerSlam, or Money in the Bank, she was fighting Rhea, and people were chanting, "We want Becky." But as the match went on, they ended up winning the crowd over. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see, like, if the crowd is going to be antagonizing that match, and if they will be able to win them over, or if they just, or if it's just a completely different case tomorrow.
Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I kind of think the spectacle of the fight might sort of take over whatever initial thoughts the crowd might have going into it. It might also depend on what and where Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair are placed and how their match goes. Because they could, regardless of where they're placed, Becky and Bianca might overshadow these two with the in-ring action, and that would not bode well for Flair and Rousey should they come after, you know. So I guess you could say that either way. I don't know which is bound to be better than the other, but I would believe.
I think if they both are worried about it, we're going to each match is going to be better for it. You know,
yeah.
I want them to try to be one-upping each other. I think that's healthy competition. And if one comes up a little short from the other, but they're both really good, you know, it's not, there's no shame in that.
Exactly. I think that's a good thing. I don't know how invested Rousey is in all of that because I don't think she's as much, you know, sort of woven into the business as the other three women. But she's definitely competitive, I think, if not petulant. So I don't know. It will be interesting to see.
The competitive, petulant Ronda Rousey.
Yeah, say it, please.
Cool. William, thanks so much. I appreciate you checking in. Stay in touch this weekend if anything comes up.
Yeah, for sure. Will do. Thank you guys for taking the call. Have a good one.
Yep, and appreciate it. Yeah, and Greg Parks are going to be hosting our WrestleMania post shows Saturday night and Sunday night on the PW Torch Daily Cast feed. We'll have links to that, a direct link to those feeds in my reports at pwtorch.com and also on our Twitter feed at pwtorch near the end of night one and night two of WrestleMania. So I encourage y'all to call in, flood the phone lines, and join him. And if you're in the building, like William, and around this weekend, call up and be the on-site correspondent or an on-site correspondent for the post shows. Those will be available to download late Saturday night and late Sunday night. If you can't catch the live stream, you can download at any time thereafter. Just search PW Torch on your podcast app and subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast to get that show. There's a new show every day of the week on the PW Torch Daily Cast feed with different hosts covering different topics, specifically like NXT, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and on and on. So check that out. Also, by the way, when you search PW Torch on your podcast feed, there's a new PW Torch VIP podcast feed. We put up a free sample of a VIP show once a week on that feed. And if you subscribe for free through Apple Podcasts to that feed, you will also have a chance to get VIP, all the VIP podcasts unlocked by just clicking subscribe and using your Apple account. That is new as of a few weeks ago. And we have had good feedback for that so far. So it's just a really easy way for you, if you just mainly utilize on your iPhone Apple Podcasts to get all our VIP podcasts, $9.99 a month or $99 for a year, and go ahead and click subscribe and actually get a free 3-day trial. So this is a great weekend if you want to try out our VIP membership for 3 days. I encourage you to do so. All right, let's keep rolling through calls, and we'll go next to we're just going to go to someone who just dropped off. So we'll go to Kyle in Baltimore. Go ahead, Kyle. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about tonight's show?
Tonight's show is just, I found very boring, honestly. It was just video packages, and it's to the point where I'm just ready for tomorrow, and this can we just kid to tomorrow. At that point, that's what it felt like to me. So I guess I was talking about WrestleMania theme at this point. That's right. And the fact, the theme for headed to WrestleMania, I'm just like that they made it official for Kevin Owens and Steve Austin to be the main event. I find very kind of sad and very kind of pathetic. And personally, for me, I would just I think I may just turn it off when it comes up, because I personally just don't care. I didn't grow up watching Steve Austin, so I care less about what he has to say. It's a talk show. What are you gonna do? Gonna have a five? They're gonna have a 15-minute conversation, then a 5-minute match? That's pathetic. That's terrible. You think about a potential Charlotte Ronda match, even though I hope you get a good match, that especially Becky and Bianca, and how that story's progressed, and how interested I'm in that match I'm into. By the way, Becky's hair, by the way, I really love it. Where she cut her hair, because Bianca loved the haircut, by the way. Side note. Anyway, you look at least that story from Becky and Bianca. You would think, I know that Ronda won the Rumble, but that story has been lacking terribly. The same with Steve Austin and Kevin Owens I don't really care. The fact that did a WrestleMania and also what Seth Rollins is going to do at WrestleMania is the only two things that people are really hyped over about. That's kind of sad and pathetic. And what do you think about the thought of having the Kevin Owens show being the main event over the two championship matches that should be, especially Becky and Bianca? I feel like it's been, if it's not going to be last, then let that be first, then that's the case, because it's just, I don't know, I think that entire thing that being the main event potentially.
They're trying to sell wrestlers on the idea, and I've heard from some that they're buying into it, that being first is an honor. If they go on first, that it's sort of seen in the locker room as a prestigious place to kick off a loaded show when there's clearly more than one main event. Mike, are you buying into that? Is that the right way to give something that doesn't feel like too much of a consolation prize to wrestlers who believe that they belong in that final slot? And you can respond to anything else Kyle had to say too, including, if you think the crowd's going to accept the final thing on Saturday night being a talk show segment and not a match with stakes and a pinfall submission or count out or DQ.
If I can't main event WrestleMania, I would find value in going on first, because that's a totally unique position. The crowd is amped up, and you're arguably going to get them at their hottest. When the show goes live, they do the big countdown. Kickoff is over. This is the real card, 8 p.m. Eastern, and you can blow the crowd away. You can steal the show from the unlikeliest of positions by giving them something they won't forget, even come the end of the show. So I do think there's value in that, and I think there's value that the wrestlers should look for in the heat of the crowd at that moment, before they're too tired or hot or drunk or whatever it might be. the one thing that I kind of worry about with the KO show is I don't know what's going to happen for sure, but I have a pretty good idea. And I'm wondering, is it just going to be exactly what I think it is? Like, big entrance for Austin, the music hits, the crowd pops, and then you have two guys who are really great on the mic go back and forth. Austin gets the upper hand, kick, wham, stunner, beer, beer's tossed everywhere, and then it's a pop. But then fading off of that for the end of WrestleMania Night 1 still would feel lackluster to me, because that's exactly what I thought was going to happen. So all I can really hope for to get away from that, I guess, low-hanging fruit, is that they swerve and do something that I don't expect, which I'm not counting on. But I just wonder, how much is Kyle really going to miss out on if he does turn it off when that segment starts,
Well, if you don't care about Stone Cold,
I may not turn it off. I'll have it on in the background. I'll just do something else. I'm really paying up at the texture, really. So I won't really – I guess that's my – I'll still have it on, because I am kind of somewhat intrigued, but not fully, but I won't pay attention. That's what I was going to do. So that's how I – that's why I should have – I probably just said that, but – because I'm – but as a paying attention, I won't pay attention too much. But you know, but yeah, that's what I would do, but yeah.
Yeah. Kyle, what else?
And then I think it's too with Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar is there's it's going to be interesting. You know, people badly want Roman Reigns to be, or you know, to be the unified champion. So that means that he's going to be on both brands. That's all. I guess is that even a good thing, because you know it's going to be like how it'd be like for Becky Lynch. I know I keep comparing Becky and Roman for a while now, but just I can't help but how similar this really is. And because of the fact that people crapped all over the fact that Becky had two championships go back and forth to Raw and SmackDown, granted it only lasted a month, so they didn't have to deal with it that much. But people already crapped on Becky already because of her babyface character. They were sick of her, whatever. So it's people's opinions about how people feel about Becky. But it's going to be the same thing with Roman Reigns if he has a winning the championship. It's going to be a both Raw and SmackDown. Is that even a good thing? People want this apparently, but do they really want it really? Because he's going to be on both shows. I can't imagine having him just being on SmackDown and not on Raw. And what are you going to do on Raw then? And then I think the other thing about Cody Rhodes too. Again, it's just that I go back to if people would have perceived Cody Rhodes as a top star, if he beats Seth Rollins, fine, but then you would think he's going to go right after Roman Reigns. Is that even a smart move? Because, you know, so what do you think about those two situations about Roman Reigns going to both shows as champion? Because you would think what, and Cody Rhodes being put in that position already, let's say on Monday, if he's going to be go face to face with Roman Reigns, is that even a good idea? Because people might think Cody Rhodes should be this big top star, which is still laughable. It's still over Seth Rollins. It says Rollins should not be losing a wrestling. He's been a loser at WrestleMania lately. Last time he won a big time match was at WrestleMania 35. Ever since that, he's been a loser at WrestleMania, and this is not going to help him at all, because it's just been. Rollins has been looking terrible this year so far. I'm thinking it was after what happened at the beginning of the year with him and Roman Reigns. I thought it was going to lead to a Universal Championship match at WrestleMania, but it never happens because of. So I just think it's going to hurt Rollins just to benefit Cody Rhodes. And what do you think about that entire situation? I'm going all over the place, but if it ends up being Roman Reigns, you know, all that stuff, you could talk about that.
Thanks, Kyle. Yep. So, you know, when we're talking about potential main eventers at WrestleMania next year, we didn't bring up Cody or Seth. And, you know, Seth is just always on call. If you need him to be in that spot, he can. Frankly, Randy Orton is out there having as he's talked about this week, his love of professional wrestling is renewed. He's having a blast right now. It comes through in his performances. And he just should stay babyface. I mean, he just is. It's just no reason to force a heel turn that people aren't going to buy and they're still going to cheer him. So just keep him babyface and ride this joy of performance that he has lately. And you got Riddle, who I still think, as marginalized as he's been in some ways against Omos and others in this booking scheme, I think he's talented enough and beloved enough that he can come out of this and be a top guy. There are a number of wrestlers, in other words, who can freshen up or be used in fresh ways. Tag wrestlers in single situations, for instance, or somebody who's not advertised overtly being in an advertised match next year, like a Cody. Kevin Owens might be a bigger star because of this Austin situation by next year. I think they have plenty of options for WrestleMania singles male main eventers next year to keep things fresh. So I'm kind of adding to what we said earlier because, you know, we haven't talked about Cody yet tonight or Seth as options. Yeah, Mike, I'll throw it to you to respond to anything else Kyle had to say.
Just that I do worry about Cody. If Cody is in fact on the card tomorrow, I think that might, maybe this is going too far, but I think that might be the high point of this current WWE run for him.
Wow. Why do you say that?
It goes.
Because he's overrated, or you think Vince will be out to get him, or what? What's the content? What way?
Because I think we've already seen what WWE thinks of him. And I don't think that him joining the new company for a couple of years or helping to start it is going to be enough to turn that on its head, their opinion, Vince's opinion of him. I think they might see it as a temporary, short-term boost, and then back he goes, right into the middle, and in 3 months, you know. So I don't see Cody as a WrestleMania, like, top-tier match a year from now.
I think there's a wide range of trajectories for Cody, and I think what you just described is one of them. I am not ruling out that he doesn't have an X factor that Vince didn't see before, or Vince values him in a way that he didn't before, because he went out there and had the fortitude to you know, be part of a startup and compete with him, and he's going to actually respect that. And if he gets along with Cody and thinks he can push Cody better than AEW did, he'll take pride in that. And he might want to make it look like, you know, hey, other AEW wrestlers, when your contracts come up, look at what we did with Cody and look at the kind of money he's making and the career he's building up. So those are all factors, too. I don't think there's any guarantees in that list. That's what Vince's mindset will be. But I can't rule them out. I think Cody is mega talented, and I think he'll be better with the parameters that WWE will provide for him and the guidance and the editing and the system than he was in AEW, where I think he got a little lost. And I think you know, some of his natural tendencies ended up costing him fan support. I think WWE will actually be good for him in a way that it stifles others. So I'm more optimistic than you, but I can't rule it out. I don't think you're crazy for thinking that way. And I think there's a number of valid reasons to be skeptical that he's going to be a top star, you know, a top guy a year from now.
Yeah, I do think there's potential that he could have a better run in WWE than he just had in AEW if they give him a similar sort of persona, but just throttle him in the right ways so that it's we get the good and not the irritating or suspect or questioning.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
But I still don't think that's going to happen, but it would be cool if it did.
Yeah, yep. All right, very good. Kyle, appreciate the call. Let's go next to Mike in Atlantic City. Mike, thanks for calling. What do you think of SmackDown tonight?
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Good.
It was good.
Talk to you.
Yeah, it was a good show. It was a good, like a pre-show to Mania. But to follow up on the the Cody talk, yeah, it'll be really interesting with Cody and WWE. Like you were saying, Wade, on the flagship about, you know, Vince will probably script Cody a certain way and probably get him more comfortable on the mic. Now, I didn't see all of Cody's promos in AEW, but was there times, Wade, where he seemed, like, uncomfortable on the mic and not, like, where you mentioned about him getting lost. I might have missed those promos, but...
I would say he indulged in meta and got a little wrapped up in, I don't even know how to describe it, a meandering, self-indulgent, undisciplined dialogue that earned him in some circles the nickname sociopath in the AEW locker room. I just think he's somebody... because he has a charisma and a star power and he carries himself in a way that is just rare in wrestling. And he's talented in the ring of telling stories. And, you know, that if you don't listen to what he said in that last AEW promo and you just watched it, but you didn't understand English, you'd say it was one of the promos of the year. But then if you actually listen to him and you know what the context of his comments are, you just think he's delusional and kind of struggling to just kind of, I don't know, you know, keep control of the narrative. Did I just say that? Yeah. He didn't get lost. I just think he, meandered self-indulgently.
I don't think it's a comfort thing so much as a judgment thing.
Yeah, exactly. So go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, Cody, he was always a guy, you know, ever since he left WWE, I mean, he was, like, for the indie scene and he seems like he wasn't, like he was against everything WWE, you know, goes for with scripted environments and all that. So this is going to be really interesting. I'm excited for him in WWE to see, like, if he seems comfortable, like when he's doing promos and when he's wrestling, you know, like how comfortable he seems. Like I'm really excited about that.
Absolutely.
You know, because you're going to, yeah, like when he's, yeah, it's going to be really exciting. As far as him versus Seth Rollins, I hope they get time. I think the match will be great. I think they'll have good chemistry together. But how is it, Wade, like if, because my friend was asking me this, if Cody and Seth Rollins, if they're wrestling tomorrow night, are they training together, like in the performance center, or are they keeping Cody away and keeping it a secret from everybody? Like, how are they going to plan their match out and stuff like that?
I think they both have enough experience. They could probably call it in the ring and have a pretty good match. I don't think they need to have any more of a walkthrough than most indie guys do when they meet up backstage, you know, at a show if they haven't wrestled before. You know, they'll walk through with the producer, the spots, and the story that they want to tell. But I think they can call it in the ring. The only, I guess, a major concern if I'm Seth that I would have is, has Cody had enough reps lately to kind of be in the right place at the right time and keep up with that level of pressure on him? Now, you know, there's no guarantee this is a full-fledged match, and there's no guarantee it's Cody. Maybe Cody comes out after the match. You know, maybe it's Marco Stunt. Seth Rollins tweeted, Marco Stunt's a free agent. So, you know, maybe it's a different match, and then Cody comes out afterwards and, you know, challenges them to a match at Backlash or something like that. So, I mean, there's a lot of scenarios that avoid that being a concern, but it's not a top concern for me. I think they'd be fine.
Yeah, I think they will, too. I think it'll be a really good match. And I'm guessing they have a rematch at Backlash, and that'll even be a better match. That's probably where they'll get, like, 15 minutes. Maybe tomorrow it'll just be, like, 8-9 minutes. So that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Cody goes over probably in both matches. And then maybe Cody moves on to – you think he moves on to Roman Reigns for SummerSlam? But I'm also hearing maybe Lesnar versus Reigns in a rematch at SummerSlam. But I was reading an article that Cody could be the guy to beat Roman Reigns. A lot of people think. That's not a spoiler, Wade, but just a lot of people's like opinions.
Yeah.
But you think he would be the right guy to beat Roman?
I need to see 6 weeks of Cody in WWE before I would even venture to rule that in or out. I don't rule it out, but I mean, we got to see how he's portrayed, how he, you know, where his head's at, what performance level he's at, how he gets over with the crowd. It's just way too little information to make an educated analysis on that. Other than, I don't rule it out because I think there's a high upside for Cody, but it is a wide range of upside and downside with him. It has been a rough 6 months for him in AEW, and you can't ignore that at this point.
Right. So, yeah, we're going to have to wait and see. But to move on to the women's tag, you know, it's a shame because I think this match is going to be a really good match. I think all the ladies are going to go out there and they're going to, you know, kill it. They're going to try to steal the show as long as they get time, which I'm hoping they do. I'm a little worried about the, you know, the placement of the match on the card, but I think they're going to go out there and put on a really good match. I hope the crowd's into it. I think it's going to come down to either Sasha and Naomi winning or Liv and Rhea. I think Liv and Rhea might win the belts. And I think that might be good because if that can give Liv a Mania moment, that would be really good. And then they could bring some meaning to those belts. And I think the fans would get behind them as champions. Because I think if Liv and Rhea win the belts, I think they'll end up having some fun matches in the future. And I think fans will start getting behind them. And I think they could bring meaning to those belts. And possibly, you know, when they lose them later down the road, you know, Rhea could turn heel maybe. Liv could feud with Rhea. And it could start Liv with a good, you know, singles run. So what do you guys think of the potential for Liv if Liv and Rhea win the tag belts? Could that be something good for Liv? I think it could be.
Thanks, Mike. I think Liv got her test as a top act and came up a little short. And I think it's going to be a while, you know, before she gets that type of opportunity again, if ever. Not ruling it out. I'm just saying it's going to be a while. And but, you know, being in a tag team, it's a good, you know, a successful push tag team is she's got talent and she's got a fan base. And that's probably the correct level for her to be at this point. Rhea Ripley obviously has a higher upside and she should be in that conversation with Bayley and Sasha of somebody who can be a fresh main event wrestler at Undertaker next year or the year after or the year after. She's young. She's talented. She came in nervous and a little overwhelmed, and they, you know, pulled back on her push. It was very different for her working in front of the, working live in front of big audiences with that kind of pressure, and it showed compared to her NXT work. And, you know, they were right, I think, to say let's not bury her, but let's not put the weight of the world on her shoulders. And I think she's coming along. So, you know, Mike, what do you think about their trajectory coming out of Mania?
I mean, if I'm Liv, I'd be happy. If I got a tag belt, that's a positive. I'd also be really excited to be paired with Rhea Ripley, I think. But support for the women's tag division and the having a meaningful women's tag division starts and ends with a company. It has very little to do with what the fans' initial reaction to that is. Say Liv and Rhea walk away with the belts. If the fans love them, it doesn't matter if the company isn't interested in a women's tag division. And to me, this four-team match feels more like we want to get all these women just crammed onto the card more so than a care about a women's tag division.
Yeah.
If they did, they would have, there'd be more of them and there'd be a tournament that they talked about a lot and promoted a lot, but no, there's four tag teams on WrestleMania. So, and they feel thrown together. So I don't know. I don't feel the company supports them. Therefore the fans won't, because they just won't, they're not going to be promoted in a way for fans to see them much past WrestleMania. It's just a thing that's going to be there in the background.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Mike, I appreciate the call. Anything you want to say as we, before we move on?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't realize I was still on.
yep.
Yeah. Yeah. About like, but if Sasha and Naomi win the belts, I don't know. Do you think that would be like a better option? And then Sasha could turn heel on Naomi later this year, and then Sasha can get her singles run.
Mike, I don't think either are bad options. I mean, I think I don't. God, you said if Sasha turns heel on Naomi.
Yes.
What you said? Yeah. I mean, I just don't want Sasha turning. Fans like Sasha. She's a better heel than a face, but fans like her. And I just don't think you can turn her anymore. I know in the, you know, Evil special, I think, you know, she said, I'm not a character. This is who I am. But you know, at some point you got to give us a consistent reason to feel certain emotions about you and then be slotted in a way where you capitalize on that consistently for years at a time, not just months at a time. And if you're all over the place, nobody knows what you stand for or who you are. And now you're getting by on fumes from what people imagined you once were. And, so no turns for her would be my primary thing. But, I mean, it's the women's tag division. If you're in it, you're not getting a major singles push. And, you know, Sasha's probably better off in the singles division. So, to me, I think Rhea and Liv have more gain from winning the women's tag belts. That's my take on that. Mike, anyway, I appreciate it. We're going to keep rolling here. But always good to hear from you.
Yep. Thanks a lot, guys. Yeah, enjoy Mania.
Yeah, you bet. Yes, you too. All right, we'll go to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland next. Ryan, thanks for holding. What do you think of SmackDown tonight? What's on your mind?
Oh, it's always fine shit leading up to WrestleMania, like I've always said in the past. And my first question is on Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. Do you see them possibly filming an angle tomorrow to build up the match, since they're saying this is the biggest match in WrestleMania history?
No, I don't. I think they think they've got the table set. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I think there's enough other moving parts, what with the seven matches they already have for night one. without sort of clouding that any further. And I don't know what they really need to further develop, but I think that's heated up as it needs to be.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think anyone attending night one is making a choice about night two, depending on what they see on night one. And I don't think you want to take, let the air out of the anticipation building up to see them in the flesh on Sunday. What else, Ryan?
My second question is on the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. I thought the initial purpose of that was to get everyone went on the card so they could get a payday, but now it's on SmackDown. So what purpose does that Battle Royal serve now?
It's WrestleMania SmackDown, Ryan. WrestleMania SmackDown. They were on WrestleMania. Yeah, the idea that everybody has to be on WrestleMania is it's like, no, that's not, this isn't, they're not third graders who need a participation trophy. It should be, and they've turned this into a storyline, which, you know, I mean, you can critique it for sure. The idea that not everybody gets to be on WrestleMania, but everybody wants to be on WrestleMania. And everybody shouldn't be on WrestleMania. And if you're on WrestleMania because you're in a battle royal, I mean, I'm sure that's cool for some people who never have a chance to get a singles match, but I'd rather work hard and get a singles match. And if I get a singles match, I'd kind of like that to be an honor and be part of an exclusive club, as opposed to a club that includes everybody who was on the active roster because everybody was in a battle royal. Like, to me, saying you wrestled on WrestleMania means you made the cut. You weren't just on the roster signed to a contract. So I'm happy about that. All right, Mike, how about you?
I agree with all of that. The only thing I would add is that they might feel like it's a tradition at this point, because they said that Battle Royal's been going on, what, now for 8 years or something? So,
yeah,
I think it's going to go on till the end of time now, whether it's on the proper WrestleMania card or, you know, WrestleMania SmackDown.
What'd you think of it, by the way, of the Battle Royal?
Whatever. It was a Battle Royal. Everybody who wouldn't... who maybe shouldn't be on the WrestleMania card or even WrestleMania SmackDown was on there. Moss won.
And a few others.
Yeah. Moss won, and I don't know. I don't think that necessarily spells big things for him or not, especially in the long term. I think he'll have a program with Corbin, and that, I don't know, we'll see where he goes from there. But, yeah, it was just there. I was a little surprised that the two things, the only two big things I know they advertised for tonight's show was that Battle Royal and the Intercontinental Triple Threat match. And I was pretty shocked that they ran them back-to-back to start the show, you know. So they didn't advertise anything that they to make the audience hang on for till the end of the show. So I thought that was a little odd.
Yeah. It felt like they front-loaded the show based on what they advertised. I mean, I don't think what they advertised were big hooks, so in a way, maybe they thought people are better off wondering if big names are going to come out late in the show, as opposed to, you know, including Lesnar and Reigns or something like that. You know, they didn't want to overtly advertise they wouldn't be. And if you say our main event is this, you know, Humberto and Garza and Ricochet, I mean, you're going to lose more people than getting it out of the way early and leaving it unknown what is at the end of the show. I'm actually kind of assuming that's their strategy.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah. Cool. Ryan, usually have a third thing?
Yeah, my final question is on Miami, especially after seeing her at a house show over the weekend at State College and then seeing her again tonight. She seems like the ideal opening match wrestler. So do you think her match will either be on the pre-show or the very first match of WrestleMania? Because just seems, gives off like that could be where, like, you know, very colorful character gets you going into the show. You know, all that glow and the dancing, like more of a, you know, sort of like a entertainment gimmick.
Mike?
I completely missed who you were talking about.
I did, too, because I'm mesmerized by Vince McMahon on my screen. He was the sound down. I was totally mesmerized. I'm sorry, Brian. Go ahead and clarify your question for us. We apologize.
Miami, my question was, do you see her as, like, the ideal opening match wrestler in that she, you know, with the dancing and the glow? You know, I saw her at State College, you know, and just took me to
gotcha, yeah.
see her live. But, man, she's probably the ideal opening match wrestler, and you see her opening WrestleMania tomorrow.
I get what you're saying. You know, I mean, it's a colorful, high-energy ring entrance, but she's not a top-level worker, promo, or star. But she's, she's not a top female act. I don't know that that's in her. And there's no shame in that. I just don't think she reaches that level. But, I mean, she's been around for a long time and has a real colorful, refined, high-energy entrance. I don't know what the ideal, opening act is, but I think when you play that music, she's got a fan base, and yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with her in that role. Mike?
I never would have thought that's what WrestleMania would open with tomorrow, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
And that's not an open air stadium, right? So
no.
They can make it,
no.
They can make it dark if need
yep.
be at any hour. So, they could definitely get the effect they want, with Naomi's entrance, and it would certainly look cool. It would not have been on my radar. So yeah, I'd be surprised.
Cool. Ryan, enjoy your weekend.
Okay. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure thing. Yep. Javier, how does it feel to have heat with Sean from Murfreesboro that you have a jingle? And he doesn't, now you can see what happens when you start getting the big push. All of a sudden there's people, wanting to backstab you or getting jealous, taking digs at you. I mean, you have done countless VIP podcasts. You tirelessly have covered Impact, written pay-per-view previews, including for this weekend's WrestleMania show. I could go on and on. And Sean is still jealous and can't get over. He talks about it every week. I think we need to have you guys kind of settle it in some form or fashion. You need to set him straight.
You know what they say is more jingles, more problems.
That is what they say. That is absolutely what they say, Mike. PW Torch contributor, Javier Machado. Mike is yours.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting to get as many death threats as I've been getting. I thought it was a pretty good show. But one thing that no one brought up, and what did you think about the Charlotte promo? Because I did not like it at all.
I don't know why you would say that, Javier. I thought it was a cool promo, and it's the most cool promo you see. Charlotte hasn't done a lot for me. I don't think she's risen to the occasion. I think she's better than the Sing Song Robotic, but I don't know. There just wasn't a lot of chemistry with Charlotte and Ronda. They seem to be operating on different wavelengths. It didn't jump out to me as like awful, because I guess my expectations for Charlotte's promos at this point are sort of just baked in. She kind of delivered kind of what I expect, which isn't great. Mike, what'd you think?
Well, first, I want to say that I got almost exactly the amount of death threats that I expected from creating Javier's jingle, because I'm catching heat for that as well. But I'm sorry, Javier, that you're getting more than you anticipated. As for Charlotte, it didn't feel like a WrestleMania go home caliber promo. Live in front of an audience. I was mainly distracted by her running gag or line saying, that's cool, after, sort of flaunting her own qualifications or whatever. I was basically also thinking, is Carlito Caribbean Cool going to come out and take issue with what she thinks is cool and spit an apple in her face? And I might have welcomed it. I don't know.
Damn it, Mike.
It was a weird
Damn
angle
it.
To take. What? Oh, Javier.
I had that in my notes. You stole that
yep.
from me.
You got to get to the good stuff.
I was going to say that I was going to ask you if Carlito was actually one, if he had been hired as a writer for her. great minds.
If he was, I could hardly tell. I could barely tell.
Javier, on a serious note, why do you think she took that approach? Like, well, how was the cool factor even a thing that anyone was thinking about, and how does that help sell the match?
I have no idea. I mean, it all, I don't know if it's like a new catchphrase she's trying to create, but why would you do this on the Go Home show? And the weird thing is, she's like, I mean, her more recent stuff had not been this bad. This felt like a turn to, like, before her, you know, her character got made over. So this was like a, you know, went way back to, like, you know, the horrible stuff she was doing. I want to say this, and I'm like reading into people's intentions, but with the way that the matches have been built, I get the impression of two people who are not cooperating. I don't know if it's just that, you know, like you said, that they're not, you know, that they're not feeling each other, or if they're like, there's animus that's like getting in the way.
Well, I just given what I've heard about both personalities, and I have not heard specifically that's the case here. It doesn't mean it isn't. It wouldn't shock me at all. I mean, Charlotte, you know, it's been documented, and I wouldn't be – and Rousey is Rousey. I mean, it's just – yeah, I mean, I don't even think I need to explain it or vouch for it. It's just these are two personalities I could totally see not getting along. I'm not ruling out that Rousey's just not a very good wrestling promo, and Charlotte has a very narrow range, and we're seeing their best, honest effort, and there just isn't chemistry. And sometimes that happens too.
Yeah, that was the whole weird thing about it. Because I understand Rousey, because Rousey has like this nervous energy to her, and she's not like really used to it. So, you know, it kind of, you were describing how she starts talking and then moves up like really quick, and then he wants to go to the end of the line. You know, that's kind of her thing.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that's more because of like the inexperience, and it's not like, you know, so I understand that. It's just that the fact that it was a regression by Charlotte, like, you know, it almost like if she weren't engaged. I mean, that might not even be that she's doing it on purpose, but she's just not, for whatever reason, not engaged and not really, you know, hitting those marks. I mean, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It's actually one of the more interesting matches I'm looking forward to for tomorrow, just to see, you know, because it could be a train wreck. You know,
I was going to say if they're not getting along, I'd say, oh, they're two professionals, but they're two unique personalities. And I am absolutely not ruling out the possibility that things could go awry. And it's another reason to tune in.
Yeah, and you were talking about the Corbin. I actually didn't mind the line from the Corbin thing. I hated the fact that they swung the sword. Yeah, I totally agree with you. Never do a match. Never set up a move that's gonna, or something that's gonna, you know, kill your opponent if it lands. I mean, I think I said that once. I thought that Darby Allin took a bump. I'm like, you know, oh, there's no way you could take that bump, and he took it. But, you know, with the exception of Darby Allin, don't ever set somebody up for a move that would kill the person. But the line that Corbin said, I actually, you know, I kind of dug it, because it was more like a, whoa, you went too far, and, like, he's almost, like, oblivious to it. You know, because he didn't really say it, like, oh, you know, and then, you know, I like the reaction that, Madcap Moss had. I'm weirdly a little bit more, I'm finding myself weirdly more interested in this match than I thought I would be.
Okay.
I'm curious as to what they're going to do with Moss, because they're foreshadowing what looks like a breakup between Moss and Corbin. They generally don't do that if they didn't have something planned, because, you know, when they're going to break up a tag team or something, they don't have anything planned for them. It was just like, you know, like just for shock value or for whatever, just to do something. It usually happens like out of the blue, but it looks like they have plans for something going forward. Do you think they could repackage Moss into something that, you know, because I mean right now he's definitely like just, I mean, I describe him as a stooge several times on the primer. Do you think they could repackage him into something?
Mike, how repackageable? is a wrestler who was saddled with Madcap Moss wearing suspenders. Is it so ridiculous and cartoonish that a sharp turn away from that actually could work better for him, because a new look is going to seem like a completely different person, not just a slightly altered person?
You could do that. Also, it doesn't have to be so abrupt and jarring. It could be a more – you can move away from that ridiculousness, especially those suspenders. Maybe those should be first to go, you know. The name is a problem as well. Madcap Moss is a problematic name. But
I doubt he sticks with that.
Right. Well, thankfully, WWE is fond of shortening names anyway, so I guess he could become just Moss, or maybe Mossman.
No, let's – let's do Riddick.
Yeah, but they're going back to it. I guess that's not a problem, but it's advisable for sure.
Yeah. Let's go.
That's why I say Moss Man. Moss is He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
You're not selling me on it. Go ahead.
But I'm really trying my hardest, for sure.
I know, yeah.
But what I have seen from Moss is that this isn't the easiest character that he's been handed, but I think he's done about with it as you can, and that's impressive, because this is kind of a BS gimmick that he's being asked to portray, but he's really dug into it, and that tells me he could dig into something that isn't so stupid, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd like to see it. I want to see them try it. Like, how much he's been invested in this and his enthusiasm and this performance, I want to see that channeled in a better direction. And why not against Corbin, who he's comfortable with?
I think, by the way, just Moss has shown the type of talent that is going to give Vince McMahon reason to consider him and try him for more of a push. And I wouldn't rule out that he isn't in, you know, 2-3 years, a significant player for WWE set up for years to come. I won't rule that out. And that wasn't the scouting report on him at NXT, but there are some wrestlers who are a better fit, you know, on the main roster than NXT. You know, Corbin was one of them, and Riddick Moss, Madcap Moss is another one. What else have you?
Feel bad for Balor? Is it time to feel bad for him?
I think a number of wrestlers right now are making kind of crazy money compared to what they ever made before. I don't know if Balor's on the cutoff and below waiting for the next deal, or if he got that. But the pay in WWE is substantially higher than it was just 5, 6, 7 years ago. And I just think there's a lot of people going, I get to live a good life, and I'm part of an entertainment company, and I'm looking at this differently than I looked at wrestling before. But whatever sting there is that I'm not getting used in a way that I dreamed of, I think it's softened by how many millionaire and multimillionaire incomes there are in that company right now compared to before. So I say that as sort of a general thing. When you start feeling bad for a wrestler and think, oh, I'd be better off in AEW, I'd be better off back in Japan. Like, the pay differential is ginormous. And I think you show up and you do what you're told, and you don't hope to get rich. You kind of are getting rich now. So I don't know. And, you know, Balor's, he's had a good career. He's older. It's not like they're cutting legs off from under a young, promising career. He's had a nice run, and he's still on TV, you know, being relied upon to utilize his talent. He's not big. He's not great on the mic. And he's not, frankly, a great fit for what WWE does in 2022 at a top-tier level, yet he's still, you know, in the mix. So, I mean, would he be a top star in AEW right now? Perhaps. Would he be a top star in New Japan? Or, you know, utilized at a high level? Of course. And his talents would be better utilized there. But I don't think he's just, you know, being buried, you know, where he'd just be, you know, losing sleep over it. That's my thing. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I forgot that he was the U.S. champion, you know, when I saw that.
Don't hold that against him.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying that's how sort of underutilized he is.
Yeah.
And also shows what the company thinks about the secondary championships. But that's not his fault. And what little I've seen of him on social media leads me to believe he's living a pretty luxurious and happy life in the sun in tropical locations. And to feel sorry for him is to presume that you have any insight into what he wants at this point in his life. And if he wants to wrestle 4.5-star matches every month, then maybe you should feel sorry for him. But maybe that's sort of behind him, I hope. He's still there, and like Wade said, he's making a lot of money. And you can only feel so sorry for somebody who's making a lot of money for doing kind of the minimal work for the line of work that he's in.
Yeah. Yep, I agree. Javier, what else?
I was referencing more the character because, yeah, the wrestler, if you take a drop, landing on a nice full bed of money softens the blow. I was just so, you know, mainly in terms of, like, you know, I should have probably mentioned more, like, I feel bad for the U.S. title at this point.
Yeah.
You know, because I thought I missed something, because I'm like, I would think that if he's the champion, they'd protect him to set up, you know, and I can see that this is likely to set up a match between Theory and Balor down the road for the U.S. title. But yeah, it was just surprising other than, you know, when they don't do like a distraction finish or anything to give you that protection, it's just like, wow, it was weird. I mean, I felt the same way about Ricochet, you know, when, after his two loss, I mean, I knew they were building a story when he lost to Garza and Humberto, but then when he lost on Raw, that was more like, you know, that was, and cleanly, it was like, you know, wow, that's unfortunate. Particularly since he's like one of your top baby faces on SmackDown.
Yeah. Yep. What else? What else have you?
I think that's about it. I did not take too much notes. But there was not really much that happened, you know, because of WrestleMania. It was just like the stuff that they happened. That pretty much wraps it up.
I'll read an email to both of you just because we talked about this earlier. I'll get your thoughts on it, Javier. Dave from Harrisburg, PA said, hi, Wade and Mike. I haven't written in some time, and I wasn't going to tonight because this is a very uneventful go-home show. But that dead mother joke at the end was absolutely horrific. I found it classless, and I can't believe that it was something Drew agreed to. What a sour taste to leave us with for the final show before WrestleMania. Sorry for the rant. Everyone, go VIP. Thanks, David. Javier, what was your reaction when you heard that as – the heavy-handed final hard sell for this feud?
Yeah, like I mentioned, I wasn't as it was a hard hit, but the thing is that they've already made the idea of his mother as part of the storyline, and I don't think that so at that point, I kind of, like, me personally, I associate it as like, okay, now this is the world of the storyline that we're in. I know there's like a link between real life and what's happening on the screen, but I create more of a thing, particularly since he named the sword after her. You knew at some point once they called the sword that would have to come into play, and that you would have villains coming after that. And the way that they played it off as more like, it didn't seem like he was necessarily that Corbin was going out of bounds for himself. He just thought that it was literally a funny joke, not realizing, like, holy crap, this is a lot. And it's like, oh, you know, and it was shocking. It was meant to be shocking for you to catch your attention. I mean, you know, everybody's going to have different levels of, you know, tolerance for that. I just have a much higher tolerance for a line like that. It does catch my attention. I'm like, oh, you know, shit just got real. It's pretty much my reaction to it.
All right, cool. Javier, thanks. Always great when you call.
Yeah, so, and check out the primer. I already sent the day one, and as soon as I've done proofreading day two, I'll send that in.
I noticed that, and I thank you for it, and I point everyone towards that, pwtorch.com. check out Javier's previews of WrestleMania Saturday and Sunday at pwtorch.com. Thanks, Javier. Have a great wrestling weekend.
All right, have a good one.
Yep. All right, Mike, anything you want to bring up that we haven't yet before we sign off?
All my notes are crossed off except for one that's very trivial, but maybe of interest to somebody. But during SmackDown tonight, there was a local ad for SmackDown coming to my hometown of Grand Rapids, Michigan. They're playing Van Andel Arena on May 20th, and they advertised two matches already. One was the champion Roman Reigns versus Drew McIntyre, who we were just mm-hmm. talking about, yeah. and also Flair versus Naomi was the other one. So, I don't know. That's what they're doing at SmackDown
yeah.
in West Michigan.
To help sell tickets.
Yep.
Well, we've had the Hall of Fame on in the background. Undertaker's giving a speech right now. Doesn't look like there's an empty seat in the house. Not many dry eyes. And I look forward to watching this back with the sound up. But Undertaker holding court and getting teared up. And, you know, this is a very big moment for him. And to have Vince McMahon appear in person at a Hall of Fame ceremony, should not be understated what a big deal that is, because he didn't even want his name mentioned by anyone, much less introduce someone. That is a high honor. I'm glad it didn't go to Glenn Jacobs or anyone else. But, you know, within the WWE canon, to have Vince McMahon introduce you is probably not going to happen again. And, you know, Undertaker is sort of deserving of that. A little spoiler alert warning for anyone who wants to watch the ROH pay-per-view on delay, because I'm going to just mention a little bit on that as I plug that. We have Sean Radican's brief report up on pwtorch.com right now. Christopher Maitland's detailed report will be posted later on, a thorough detailed report on that pay-per-view. It was newsworthy in a number of respects, including Samoa Joe showing up, and Tony Khan has since tweeted that he is now All Elite. So another big name, former WWE name, added to AEW. Mike, any instant reaction to that?
Wow, that's the first time hearing of it. Not a total shock, I guess, because we knew Joe was out there. I'm not in tune with his, I guess, physical condition, if he's good to go, and to what extent. But he is awesome. So that's a quality signing.
I'm a little surprised he's All Elite and not like RO, like greatly honored. I don't know what they're going to, what the catchphrase would be for that. But like talent in AEW, if Samoa Joe can wrestle or if Aubrey's going to be utilized, if Tony Khan owns ROH, it's not a subsidiary of AEW, I'd say have Samoa Joe be an ROH guy. That's where he gained his acclaim. He is associated with that brand, and then save the acquisition of Joe for another time. But we got to see how that plays out. But you know, I don't know. I just think at some point you want, if you own the brand and people see it as a minor league or a subsidiary, they're not sure what it is. Have Samoa Joe sign with ROH, not AEW, and make that sort of a big deal for ROH. But that's my, you know, instant reaction, and we have to see how they plan to utilize him in AEW, because it may turn out to be exactly the right move, because obviously it's a much bigger stage and prominent position. If he is able to wrestle and utilized well in ROH, I'm sorry, in AEW, I'm all for that. Also, because I've been a big advocate for Samoa Joe, you know, dating back to his ROH title reign. Mike, thank you so much for being on the program and co-hosting once again. And it's been a lot of news tonight. So many, we had Rampage, SmackDown, Hall of Fame, ROH, plus other stuff going on, and a big Thursday and now a big Saturday and Sunday coming up. It's a great weekend to be a wrestling fan.
Yeah, it's great to take part in the pro wrestling post show on WrestleMania weekend with you. You can find me on Twitter at the Mike Show 42. I am doing the PW Torch Triple Threat this weekend, concluding now with this post-show broadcast, but also I'll be doing the kickoff reports for nights 1 and 2 of WrestleMania the next 2 days. So you can look for those as the WrestleMania card proper is getting underway. So, yeah, Wade, thanks for having me. It's been fun talking to you tonight.
And how has it been reviewing Veer Mahan in the WWE main event TV report realm?
How has it been? Repetitive.
A serious question. Are you high on him being utilized as a impact player on the main roster? You know, when he shows up on Raw on Monday?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
His matches are brief and pretty repetitive. I will admit that he's branched out a little bit in that he's won matches by pinfall and submission, so that's good. But the matches are all about, you know, 4.5-5 minutes long and kind of cut and paste. I said in my most recent report that I think whatever happens with Omos this weekend, I believe that Omos will appear to squash Mahan on the Monday after WrestleMania.
Oh, God.
And that will be Mahan's big appearance.
Wow. Wow.
And a big rib on him. So.
And us, yes.
And us, yeah. But I don't know.
Not the Wade Keller Pro-Thing Post Show listeners. It'll be forecast and expected for us, not a joke.
Exactly. But I just don't know, like, how, like, his buildup to appearing on Raw seems like a running gag. So I just don't know how seriously we're meant to take it when it actually happens. And what you can watch on Main Event is, like I said, kind of repetitive, and they talk about him in a way like he's this supreme big man, and he's just kind of mixes in. And it doesn't help that it's on Main Event only, you know, which is, you know, a second-tier program.
Just Jimmy Hart. It looks like a CGI from an image of him from 1986. He still looks the same. I don't know how they do it. And Undertaker is very comfortable roaming around with that earpiece mic, and he looks like he's ready to, like, host the next Apple event, roaming around the stage holding court. He is just in a comfort zone, interacting with people here now, paying tribute to Yokozuna. So I like this Hall of Fame in the middle of the ring at an arena after a wrestling show, and all the cutaways and the big screen and the set. It looks like a worthy format, altered format for the Hall of Fame. So of course it helps to have Undertaker as your headliner and Vince McMahon introducing them. So anyway, Mike, thank you.
Thanks again, Wade.
You bet.